ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, it's Sam Hawley from ABC News Daily, the podcast that brings you one big story affecting your world each weekday in just 15 minutes.
So it's basically raw sewage that flushes into the harbor that attracts bait fish. The bull sharks, they're drawn to the bait fish. It makes it very dangerous to be in the harbor immediately after a big storm.
Join me for ABC News Daily. Find it on the ABC Listen app.
After 17 days, the coalition are back together again. What a volatile relationship. Ahead of the parliamentary sitting week, coalition members say they are united. But it's only been 3 weeks since David Littleproud said a coalition was untenable under Susan Lee. So is it all going to be different this time? Well, they always promise that, don't they? Meanwhile, Israeli President Isaac Herzog has arrived in Sydney for a four-day visit following the Bondi terror attack. It's a contentious visit. Welcome to Politics Now. Hi, I'm Patricia Carvelis.
And I'm Jacob Greber. And boy, aren't we chewing on the oats of this endless Liberal Party coalition story.
It's like
the biggest bag of horse chaff. And people like you and I have to chomp our way through every bit of it. When's it going to end?
Well, I have a vexed relationship with it because, of course, you know, with my journo hat on, it is a really fascinating story, right? Watching the sort of splintering of the right and the emergence of these rivalries and what's it all really about. But as a sort of citizen and voter, I think, come on, guys, get your S together because we need a good opposition in this country, like that makes governments better. So, you know, mixed feelings. But okay, backstory here. Obviously, they had all of this time apart. Susan Lee held her ground, I think. In fact, if I compare her to previous Liberal leaders, I think she's held her ground better than any of them. So people can undermine her all they want, but she has stared them down, these Nationals. Finally, however, and I think perhaps she's been set up by the right here. That's a theory some of the moderates have. She brokered this deal with David Littleproud to get the coalition back together, really backing down from her demand that for 6 months these three national front benches sit it out. Now it's only 6 weeks cumulatively, so at the start of March they get their jobs back. However, she has got a deal on cabinet, shadow cabinet solidarity in the way decisions are made, codifying it. How do you think this is playing out?
Very weakly for her. I think it's just, I know what you're saying about her being set up. I know what you're saying that it's stacked against her. But I think I couldn't see anything other than weakness when I saw the two of them yesterday, pretending that everything was okay. It was a very, very uncomfortable.
Ooh.
It was a very uncomfortable presentation. We're going to have a rumble today. The two of them, talking about David Littleproud and Susan Lee, pretending that they weren't a big part of the cause of the split in the first place. And supporters of the Liberal Party and the National Party are supposed to unsee all of that. Very hard to do. So I think there's a threshold problem there. She is under pressure because the situation is so bad. The situation is so bad because partly she's struggling to get on top of it. There is a chicken and egg element to the state of the polls at the moment. We can talk about them as well. But yeah, that's my first take. Happy to have it out.
All right. The rumble is this. I agree with you. It's weakened her. Because it has, right? We know that because certain moderates are really disappointed now. So all of that is actually factually correct. What I'm saying is how wickedly, deeply unfair that is because she is the only Liberal leader who had, you know, said, I'll take your resignations. No, I want this. Tried to play hardball, tried to get a deal on, you know, this solidarity which they were pushing on to, you know, and it seems like a fair deal that a joint party room would have to decide and be, you know, sure of that. It's not unreasonable. So it's good for whoever comes next. And they have, so one moderate said to me, the right are so clever. They've basically got that Susan Lee to do all of their heavy lifting and their dirty work. And I'll give you two examples. Net Zero. Mm. She has to preside over that S show and then gets what they wanted, no net zero, right? So she presides over that. They tick, they get that. Immigration on the agenda, tick, they get that. Now the Nationals being half stared down but then a deal so they can get back together. So the Howards and the others who are like, get back together, what are you doing? So she kind of, she's got a lot of pressure beyond just her party room, sort of the optics. And then her big reward is, well, we're going to roll you anyway, potentially, because you're a bit, you know, look at your polling. Well, I wonder why her polling's not doing well. It has nothing to do with the blokes trying to stab her every day.
Well, what about this point, though? You're alluding to a chicken and egg thing there for her as well. And then you're suggesting that because she's a woman, she doesn't get a look in. She doesn't get any kind of leeway. It's just there's a pile on. But you just went through the list of things that the moderates are disappointed with her about. Net zero, immigration. By the way, we haven't seen the immigration policy yet, but, you know, that's all been put on ice. That presumably will be going down a road that suits the right. And as you say now, they've codified, frankly, things that always existed between the two parties. Other leaders were able to manage those tensions without needing it to be codified in this way. So I'd park that one as well for a moment. But what was the point of Susan Lee if you're a moderate?
What is the point? I absolutely understand that point. I've said it before, so I'm not sitting here as a Susan Lee barracker. You know, I'm deeply not a barracker of anyone. I mean that, right? But I do think she's been put in this lose-lose situation, and it's just unfair not to see it any other way. So she's been set up for failure, and yet a whole bunch of people have got their aims, including, so what situation are we in? We're on Monday. Let's recap. We've got a situation where some people, let's call it for who it is, Jane Hume, for instance. So she is, to give us some context, she's a moderate from Victoria who was on the front bench. Susan Lee didn't invite her back onto her front bench, which, of course, made a big enemy of her, and that was well known. Jane Hume, very close to Angus Taylor. It's interesting to kind of remind everyone, if they don't know, that Jane Hume is a moderate, but she's been split off a bit from the moderates for a while because she's a bit of an Angus Taylor supporter. They agree with each other a lot on economics and other issues. And clearly now I think she's playing a very important role.
So what you're describing is what she's been saying this morning, both on Sky and in the corridors. Where she's come out and said,
she's trying to bring
it's
on
a disaster, it's untenable, essentially, and the key quote is, something has to change. And I think you can spell something with two S's because there's really only one thing in her mind that has to change, and that's Susan has to go. She's agitating for that. She's trying to get the right, I think, A, she's, as you said, trying to keep them on side with her, but B, I think she's trying to precipitate things by coming out so strongly this morning. It's definitely a push to nudge this thing into a full-blown leadership contest. And I don't think we're actually that far away from that moment. I think we're hours, days, not much more than that away from this kicking off, is my suspicion, if I was a betting man right here and now.
I think that's absolutely correct. I think it's this week. Then let's get to the polling now of how that kind of further kicked her when she was already down. So the news polls come out. Her polling is, well, catastrophic, isn't it?
There's no other word for it. Mm. As indeed Jane Hume pointed out, were those polls to reflect the next election, there would be no Liberals in Victoria. There'd be no federal Liberals from New South Wales, and who knows where else they would be gone. So that's the level of disaster that the Liberal Party is looking at. They're not the only ones. The Nationals, for the first time, it's interesting, news poll has split the Nationals out. Normally it's just a coalition block. That's slightly tricky because if you think about it, LNP in Queensland is difficult to separate out when you're doing a poll of 1,200 people around the country. Mm. So what they've done is they've split them out, Liberal Party and Nationals. The Nationals primary is within the margin of error. It's 3 or 4%. In other words, it could be zero. That would be within the margin of error for the National Party. So yeah, it's, and then One Nation I think is 27%. So extraordinary numbers. That is the poll that they care about in the coalition more than any other poll. It's as bad as many people thought it was going to be. It's certainly as bad as what all the other polls are saying. So it's not like we're cherry picking one poll over the other. This is consistent data. And you know as well as I do, when you lose News Poll this badly, you don't stay in the job very long.
Mm. No, you don't. And so we accept the notion that the writing is on the wall. I think there's more complexity to it. I do think that she's been absolutely given no chance for success. But she did seize the leadership when the party was at its lowest ebb. Mm. So it kind of comes with the territory a bit, right? Especially given under the Dutton leadership, there was an absolute repression of ventilating.
It's pretty much the second worst job in Australian politics,
yeah.
isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
The first worst job is the other person who wants that job because they don't even get their photograph on the party room wall.
It's so true. So Angus Taylor, just to recap, so he ends up being in this really key position because, so if you look at his behaviour over the last couple of months, hasn't been actively agitating, wasn't even in the country for the period of the sort of Bondi crisis and all the rhetoric that came with that, or in the parliament.
Well, I think the key point there is, I think you suggest that strategic mistake of bring parliament back, you must pass all the things that Gillian Siegel wants, including very, very strong anti-vilification laws. He wasn't around for any of that. Lo and behold, government pulls everyone back. Here's the laws that you wanted us to do, and that's when it all fell apart
exactly.
3 weeks ago.
Exactly.
So he has been outside of all of that. He's quite literally
now
out
of
the country.
And that has helped him, but I'm going to add something because people come here for a reason. Hindered him as well. Helped him in so much as clean skin, right? Not seen as actively undermining her, clean skin in terms of where he stood on all those hate laws and how he positioned.
Yeah.
So it can be sort of a fair with a friend, right? However, also hindered him because I've spoken to people on the right who are like, where was he? Mm. Why didn't he come back? Where's, you know, because people look for hunger and they think, well, hang on a minute. Are you just waiting for this to be handed to you? And that there's a lot of resentment about that because, you know, whatever you think of Andrew Hastie and a lot of negativity around him too, but there's also a view that at least he was out there going for it, right?
Yes,
not just waiting for it to fall into his lap.
I suspect the people who are upset would have been people who were maybe hoping Hastie would get up. I think it's interesting, and I'm keen to get your thoughts on this. He's played that game partly because he is conscious of not actively tearing down a leader, let alone the first female leader of the Liberal Party. That would be sitting there worrying him because it will look terrible if they've just knocked her off and again reinforced that it's blokes that run the Liberal Party. That's not how you get anywhere in future in any political party. One Nation's run by a woman and it's, you know, ascendant. So maybe there's something to this, having women in leadership caper. But time's running out on him playing that game, I think, and my mail is that a decision's about to be made pretty soon.
Me too.
Where he
Even
then has
the
to take the next step. Possibly.
Well, the next step. And what's the next step?
So the next step is he needs to
resign from the front bench. That's right. You cannot be, the way that the rules work is you cannot be so actively canvassing support, which he clearly is, and not resign because, I mean, there's a Westminster system that we you know, they take those rules seriously. They're meant to. And so it actually reflects badly on him if he doesn't. So it is going to force his hand. The other thing is he would like the perfect timing, right? Mm. But I think those around him are like, mate, you don't get to choose your perfect timing. And there's a bit of that too.
So there's a bit of difficulty this week because the Senate is in estimates. Not all the senators are necessarily in Canberra. That's point number one. Some of them beam in on these hearings. So if you did want to have a party room vote for a new leader, you need to get pretty much all the ones who aren't here on the plane. So that's a technical problem. There's also the problem of when you might schedule that meeting because estimates goes all day and all night, you know, pretty much. So you'd have to schedule it at 7 a.m. or 8 a.m. Not saying that wouldn't be possible. Of course it is. And then the other thing is, how do you actually get to have that meeting? How do you get to the point? And there's a whole bunch of pretty kind of technical stuff that goes on there with the whips and whether they go to the leader and say, look, the party room wants to have a meeting, special meeting. The leader doesn't have to follow that. They can ignore it. Doesn't look good, but they can follow it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a whole bunch of jockeying going on around that, which is why it's hard to tell exactly when precisely this might happen. But yeah.
Yeah. But we do think it's going to be on. And if it's not on, can I say, if Angus Taylor doesn't pull the so-called trigger, that actually, in another way, because he is also in his own lose-lose, will reflect badly on him as well. Because it's like, mate, are you going to do it? Or are you too, you know, and it's that, I wrote it in my column, you know, in politics, there's a real, and which is on the ABC website right now, we'll put it in the show notes, but there's a real thing in politics, as you know, Jacob, about your ticker and whether you've got the sort of, you know, have you got it in you, mate? Mm. And so there's a bit of pressure on Angus Taylor to not be so, because one of the critiques of him is that he's a little entitled. And so a lot of people are like, are you going to go for it? Are you going to do the hard work? Or are you waiting for us to sort of pull out the red carpet? And I'm quoting what people have said, not to me, not, you know, my own views on him, just to be clear. Like, I can see, you know, the reasons for lots of different options. Interesting intervention too that I want to mention, showing the resistance. Now, you've heard a lot of famous words before a spill, by the way, so don't trust famous words to mean much, but it's worth mentioning that the Shadow Attorney General, Andrew Wallace, described this growing speculation over the challenge over Susan Lee's leadership as, you know, innuendo. But he also used really strong language about basically, you know, what it would be like to, you know, I'm going to quote it, okay? Oh, you know, you guys have just politically assassinated the first female leader of the Liberal Party. That's what would happen, he says. So he warns about the transactional cost. That's key. They're the voices that will be going in the next hours and days hard, saying, don't think that this is
without cost. Yes.
Don't think this is a victimless crime. Well, like, I think there will be victims.
Yes. And I think that's an important warning from someone like Wallace to Angus's people, because one of the things that Taylor doesn't want is to inherit a party that's angry, split, divided, and you know, the continuous chaff chomping that the rest of us have to do watching them. So he wants it to be a unifying moment. And you've got people like Wallace saying it won't be. So does she get to a point where she says, enough's enough,
bring it on,
this is untenable, I'm out? Or is she holding on for grim?
So far, all indications are that she is holding on, and that she, you know, for her, it's like she's aware that she, all the argument I just made for all the heavy lifting she's done, she knows that. She's a little frustrated by that. Like, I've done all this and now you want me to go? Get real. Take me out. And so watch that, because she's got a real fight in her, actually, I reckon, don't you think?
Oh, she's always had that.
Imagine getting up and looking at that diabolical news poll and, you know, this running narrative that One Nation is now out to slay you and that it's essentially your fault as well, when I think one of the best lines from John O'Dunham on AM this morning. Now, John O'Dunham, leading Conservative, you know, I try and tell people where everyone stands. He's kind of a hasty man of the right, and so that the right's not all unified. I don't think he's, you know, known to be a Angus Taylor lover. And he's
been doing a lot of work for Susan Lee, like
exactly.
Hard policy, crunchy
exactly.
stuff.
And that's where I'm going
negotiating
with this.
On
when he said,
various bills.
In terms of the polling, it is on all of us here. And I actually felt like he meant that. Like, yeah. Hang on a minute. It ain't just her responsibility. Yeah. You cannot go out there, undermine her and play all these games and then be like, ooh, I wonder, like, she's not cutting through. Oh, geez, I wonder why. Like, seriously, are we stabbing in the dark about the reason?
And I'd just go back to what I was saying about what is the purpose of her if you're a moderate? And the frustration around, for instance, net zero. We talked about it at the top of the podcast. Where was Dan Tehan on the net zero debate? You know, he was AWOL. He was literally overseas on a study tour of nuclear power stations.
They love those study tours.
When the National Party was writing the policy that they then adopted.
Yep.
I think Dunham has a real point there that it's just, But there's a lot of them who don't have their hearts in it as well. Like, it's miserable being in opposition for a second term. It's even more miserable when you've got a shellacking.
Yeah.
And some of them are sort of phoning it in, I guess you might say.
I think that's right. Look, let's change the topic to something that's going to be huge this week and is already huge. Today, Israeli President Isaac Herzog has arrived in Sydney for that 4-day visit following the Bondi terror attack. So backstory here. The government invited him. He is, you know, the sort of a very much a ceremonial role president. He's not, you know, he's clearly not the prime minister. He's not Benjamin Netanyahu, yet he is clearly, you know, a big figure in the Israeli state. We know how many people on the streets protesting about their feelings about Gaza feel about the Israeli state generally. And so his visit is contentious, as the government has said. However, he has come here to provide solidarity to Jewish Australians who lost their lives. He's just done a press conference. He's just spoken, rather, in Bondi. But this is really tricky for the government to handle. You know, this is just so complex. There are so many strong emotions here. They are trying to walk a very difficult line, trying to show solidarity with the Jewish community that have suffered immeasurably and are right to feel red hot rage about anti-Semitism and the threats that they're constantly under in our country, where you'd think that wasn't the case, yet it clearly is the case, and it was demonstrated in December. So that's going on. That's who they wanted to come. I'm sure not universally, but some, you know, clearly a lot of Jews did want this guy to come. So the government's trying to walk that line. And at the same time, we've got people who see him as, you know, very linked to Israel for obvious reasons. He's the president of Israel. I mean, they're not wrong. He is. Even if you want to have a sort of semantic argument about, oh, but he's not in charge of that, he's not a political role, whatever. He represents Israel, and we know how many people feel about Israel. And so that's a pressure cooker situation. And now the government has to manage it. And state governments and the cops. How many cops are there deployed? Police, sorry, if it sounds like, you know, too flippant. Thousands of police in New South Wales to manage this. Jacob, I see this as a genuinely wicked kind of issue.
I think everyone here is sort of bracing that it doesn't end up devolving into ugliness. A visit that is really about the families of the victims and that community. That's why he's here. He's not here for a trade visit or a military negotiation. He is here to offer solace to that community. And the nature of the conflict, of course, is that others will see that as an opportunity to make a political point about what the state of Israel is up to. I think I think all of that's true, and I think there's a legitimate debate about how far protests should be allowed to go. The New South Wales government obviously putting a lid on that. That's being challenged by some of the groups in the courts. That's still unfolding. There's days of it to go. I think it also shows that the Albanese government itself is not bowing to any of that pressure. Mm. And a lot of it's coming from within Labor. There are voices inside Labor. You had Ed Husic on your show, afternoon briefing last week, saying he was uncomfortable with the visit. Mm-hmm. The Prime Minister and Cabinet is staring that down, and they are going through with this visit. They invited him very soon after the events. If they'd waited a month, they may not have invited him. They might have done that sort of rational thing of, oh, it could end up being really ugly and divisive. They haven't. They've stuck to their original invitation. They see it as an important statement for the Jewish community, and they're ignoring what the critics will say. I think that's quite an important signal to Israel, especially the Netanyahu government, which doesn't think very highly of the Albanese government at all. We know what Netanyahu's said many, many times about the Prime Minister.
Yeah. Look, I think out of all critics of the Prime Minister, the Netanyahu critique of our Prime Minister is the one I take as the least serious of all, given the things this man is accused of. Obviously, a lot of it's still before the international court, but like it's let's just get a sense of proportion about that particular man. However, the Prime Minister struggled enormously after the Bondi attack.
Absolutely.
The Prime Minister ain't falling for that one again. He understands that he has to show solidarity to the Jewish community. And if that means annoying people who are campaigners for Palestine and for against the Gaza conflict, which I think is their entitlement, by the way, but if that means that, he's willing to do it and he will do it. But that doesn't mean, that doesn't create internal tensions for him. And I suspect, and this is me reading his mind, he doesn't really feel like doing it. Like, it's not.
I'm not sure. Remember, this is a bloke who.
He wants to talk about how terrible the coalition is and, try and land some things in his budget. He doesn't want any more international issues. And this guy's the Israeli president to dominate Australian politics. But he also knows he has to suck it up.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's right. He would rather be talking about something else. But he's also stung by what was put to him and what he was accused of in those early days, including that he was personally responsible for those terrible acts, which sort of absolves the people who committed the act. An incredible thing to have said. So he is conscious of that. He doesn't. He wants to push back against that, and so he's pressing ahead with his visit. And I mean, I don't know. As someone who watches these things, I hope it doesn't turn into something ugly. It probably will, but I hope it doesn't.
Yeah, I hope it doesn't as well. And, always important to put in perspective that the people who wanted him here are like a community that are suffering enormously, and that should, I think, guide some of our thoughts and commentary about this. It's an important part of the story. All right, so Parliament's back. It's going to be a huge week, Jacob. Strap in. Are you prepared? Have you got your snacks ready for long days, all of that?
Yep. Long nights, early mornings.
We're on sort of spill watch, which is something you and I, as old timers, have been on many times.
Chasing the ultimate prize, or is it?
Well, that's the thing. I don't know if it's a prize I'd want, but you know. You do you, Liberals. That's it for Politics Now today. Join me tomorrow. Fran will join me because we're going to make a special episode of Just Your Questions. If you have a special question for us, send it to thepartyroom@abc.net.au and we'll answer it. See you, Jacob.
See ya.